Oh my God, I'm so nervous. So, hi, I'm Rachel. I'm a compulsive overeater. And yeah, I'm from the Early Bird meeting. It's so lovely to see loads of other fellow early birders, but I'm so not used to speaking to a room full of people in 3D. So please forgive me. So compulsive overeater, and I think I always have been, actually. I can't remember a time when I didn't overeat. It was the way that I comforted myself for absolutely everything. And in thinking about step seven, and I was thinking, and also the learning to love part of it. For me, step seven is absolutely pivotal in my move from feeling that what I am is utterly wrong to I'm a human being who makes mistakes. And that's been, for me, that's been central to my spiritual transformation. And just to tell you a little bit about how it was. When I was young, there's probably loads of reasons for this, but which I'm not going to go into, but what I developed was an utter sense of self-hatred. I absolutely could not abide myself. And it became very, for me, it became really quite extreme to the point of psychosis when I was quite young. I felt so alienated from everybody. And if somebody mentioned the word love to me, that was a threatening word. It meant Japanese knotweed around my neck. It meant demands on me. It meant all sorts of twisted things. I could not get on with love at all. I didn't want to be connected to anybody. I just terrified of the entire world. And the way that I protected myself from the world was to eat. And then I hated myself for eating because I should have more control over myself. So I went on mad diets. I was an absolute kind of yo-yo binge and starver. I will say for anybody who's bulimic here, I always think of myself as a failed bulimic because I tried absolutely desperately to make myself sick and I never could. And I thought I was such a failure for doing it. And now, of course, I'm so very glad that actually that wasn't one of the things that I managed to pick up. And interestingly, on the outside, everything looked pretty fine. I mean, apart from the fact I went up and down the scale quite a lot, about 9 stone. That was kind of the way that I did it. The other thing I should probably say, actually, because to qualify, is that I've been in the rooms now about 28 years. My current length of abstinence is 19 months. So, as our Americans would say, you do the math. Mine has been a history of relapse. And one of the things that Step 7 has absolutely given me is that I can come up here and say, my history has been one of relapse. And I'm still here. And I would say for anybody who's ever had any experience with this, one thing I did do right, just one, which was I kept coming back. Mm. I kept coming back. I kept having a toehold. And I can remember, and I think there's probably people who were at the various meetings, I was just like a mess, kind of going, I can't get this, I can't get this, I just can't get it. And then I did. And then something would happen. And I'd stop getting it. But I kept coming back. And I think that was partly it's about the step seven, that being able to form that relationship with a higher power and to be able to see myself as somebody who makes mistakes, not somebody who is a mistake. When I was young, I used to write to-do lists, and I would write at the top, things I need to do in order to become a human being. To become a human being. I've just felt that bad about myself. And of course, right at the top there was be thin. And I never was thin enough for myself. So I never succeeded as far as I was concerned in being a human being. To the external world, I was bullied. There were lots of stuff going on in my family. I just kind of retreated into a world of food and misery. That was pretty much my childhood. I came into the program, say, about 28 years ago. Basically, I got lucky. One of the things that I always wanted, because after be thin was be normal. By normal, I meant straight. I wasn't that either, actually. So I managed to come out in my 30s and met a woman that I was sort of, oh yeah, very nice, lovely, but I was a complete and utter emotional mess. Turns out she's in recovery in another fellowship, and she told me in the most loving and recovery way that the relationship was not going to last if I continued to be emotionally unavailable. And luckily, I was able to hear it, and I remember her taking me to my first meeting in London. Not that she's even remotely controlling, and not that I'm going to take her inventory. But she... she stood there while I went to the meeting, because I had been saying for ages, oh, yeah, of course I'm going to go, of course I'm going to go. And then I did. And I can remember hearing there, and it kind of came back to me when I was thinking about this share, that somebody shared then about the fact that they'd had a relapse. And actually, that was what spoke to me, because I could so relate to what they were sharing. It just felt so real to me. I then probably forgot that bit. I noticed for ages and ages and just thought, oh no, I've got to share positive things all the time. But what I did do right from the beginning was to start working the steps. And I've worked the steps several times. So I've worked step seven several times and in several different ways. And what I've noticed over the years is that, you know what, it's not that I did them wrong, but I did them the best I could at that time. When I first started, I kept thinking I'd done it wrong, of course, because we're talking about defects. One of those is like this awful self-hatred. You've done it wrong. So I started to work the steps the best way I could. The first time I did step one, I kind of got it, but I got it enough to start. And that was what I needed. Step two, there's a lovely bit in the big book where it says, do you believe, or I can't remember the exact words, but it's possible to believe. That's the beginning. All I needed was just that willingness, a little tiny bit. I was very allergic to God, to higher power. I was brought up as a secular Jew with a great contempt for anything that smacked of religion. And it took me ages to work out that religion and spirituality were different. It took me ages to work out that my higher power does not have to be the same as anybody else's. As far as I can see, there's probably as many different versions of higher power as there are people in this room and in the world. For me, I know that I found that to have a personified higher power didn't work. So I kind of don't define it. For somebody who's as word-oriented as me, it's astonishing that I don't describe it, but that's what works for me. And what's central, though, is to form a relationship with that higher power, even though I don't define it. If that, I might not sound like really weird, but that's kind of just how it works for me. So step one, powerlessness. Step two, I have found the hardest, because coming to believe that there is something out there that can restore me to sanity. In my case, I tend to think it was give me sanity, but I never really had sanity to start with. I think that was one of the things. From there, for me, I found actually step three made sense. Once I had something that I could believe in, handing it over was quite easy. I made the basic decision, and I have to do it on a daily basis because I keep forgetting. And one of the reasons everyone's been saying, hello, hooray to the early birders, is because it's a meeting that I can get to every single day. So every single day, every single night, I seem to forget I'm a compulsive overeater. And every single morning, I need to kind of be reminded. So I really like having a morning ritual. That really helps me. I've done step four a number of times. And that's where I really started to get the hang of, I make mistakes. And that's okay. I was so competitive. And I still am, and it's something that I still struggle with, actually, being really, really competitive. I always had to be absolutely the best. I wouldn't try anything. One of the absolute joys of recovery for me has been doing stuff that I'm not very good at. Because it's fun, or because I'm interested in it, or because it helps somebody else. I would never do that before. If I couldn't be the best, I didn't want to have anything to do with it. And of course, I was never good enough. So what was my response to all of that? Guess what? Eat. I was very, very, actually, I have to say, I was very, very good at that bit. I was very, very good at binging. I was also very good at doing spectacular diets, losing huge amounts of weight very, very quickly, and then putting it all back on again. Drama queen, that was me. So step four and five, that started to give me that idea that, you know what? I do have a part in it, but I'm powerless over it. And for me, the humility part, it's going from that shame of what I am is a mistake and unchangeable to saying, no, actually, I am powerless over this. I'm powerless over all my defective character as much as I'm powerless over the food. But that doesn't mean I'm helpless. Mm-hmm. It means I've got help and there are things that I can do. And I was thinking, actually, when I did this, I sort of thought, I could just tell you all my defects of character, but that would take way more than 15 minutes anyway. And the way that I've worked step seven has been in several different ways over the years. The first time that I did it, it was very much about actually really thinking about what were my defects of character and praying for each of them individually to be lifted. But you know what, others came in. And what I found was it's almost like I needed to hand over the whole of myself. Good. The step seven prayer is about have all of me the good and the bad, or as I've heard it sometimes said, the seemingly good and the seemingly bad. But another thing that I'd noticed, thank you, and I was thinking about defects of character, is sometimes what I see as a defect actually depends on the circumstances. I haven't quite worked out how procrastination helps. But I'll think about that tomorrow. But one of the things I was thinking about, I signed up to do this share last year at the convention last year, and the first thought that came into my head was, oh my God, what are people going to think of me? I better be abstinent all year or I'm going to be really embarrassed. So actually, people pleasing can be really helpful, because sometimes it helps me to be quite a sociable person, you know. It's the kind of thing that will make sure that I, say, have a shower every day, because I don't particularly want people to think that I'm smelly. Actually, that's quite helpful. But when it comes to, I'm so worried about what people think that I do ridiculous things and I completely subsume myself in, you know, I absolutely one for knowing how I feel by taking the temperature of what everybody else is in the room. That's so much me. Do that much less than I do now. But you know what? It's not been me that's stopped that. It's been just the, I can't quite work out exactly how it works, but there's something about just keep on praying, keep on doing the actions, and it kind of works. So for me, it's been very much about that. It's been letting myself make mistakes, which I do all the time. And it's in the big book, there's a really lovely bit that says, none of us does this perfectly all of the time. I mean, there was a bit of me that sort of said, well, I'm going to, but I never did. You know, yes. I was going to sort of start this with, you know, how can I talk about step seven? I don't have any defense. But seriously, the first time I did step four, I couldn't do resentments because I could not bear to think that I had resentments, because I couldn't bear to think that I was so awful. Second time I did it, I had about 400. Because I had learned that actually, do you know what? It's okay to have resentments. I'm powerless over it, but not helpless. I've got step seven that says I can ask my higher power to remove it. And then that gives me the possibility to do a connection so I can take the action. I mean, I would love to kind of go, yeah, please remove the defects, and it just happened automatically. It doesn't, or it hasn't for me anyway. So for me, step seven is absolutely that, learning to love, learning to accept myself. And then, of course, once I could accept myself, it's so much easier to be able to accept everybody else as well. And do you know what? I think I'm going to leave it there. I've got lots to get through, and it's been lovely. Thank you so much.
That's fantastic. Thank you, Rachel. I'm going to hand you over to Ghislaine now. What I did miss out in my little script was what step seven was, but it's over there. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. What? I meant to read that out earlier. You all know what it is. Okay, here we go, Ghislaine. Over to you.
Thank you.
Be all right?
Oh, boy. Okay, like Rachel, I'm quite nervous as well. Yeah.